Carol, welcome to WSBA. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Dennis. Good morning. Good to be here.
This Heath Ledger death is, for me, I think has bigger, much broader implications. It's a kind of a statement of what's really going on across the nation among young people who aren't in Hollywood, as well as those who are. And I thought it was ironic that right after Heath Ledger's death, the office of the drug czar at the White House, they'd already planned this to make a major announcement of an effort to educate parents about teen prescription drug abuse. So all of this ties together with the use of prescription drugs. What is your take on this situation?
Well, Dennis, I agree with you. I don't think it's an accident at all, actually, that report came out following his unfortunate death. And I say not an accident because I believe that all things are connected and all timing is perfect, meaning that the government statement and his death are both symptomatic and emblematic of a greater problem. It's much more than about Heath Ledger's death, although we can use this opportunity to bring meaning to that death by saying, let's look not at symptoms, which is what we're looking at when we look at an isolated death, or we look at the fact that we have a million high school students a year in this country who try to commit suicide, or we have a million and a half runaways a year. They're symptoms. You can't treat them. It's like having cancer and treating the wound on your skin at the surface level. That's only symptomatic of the underlying problem.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny, what the White House announced, where you're now seeing the commercials for that on television, where it shows a drug dealer on the street talking about business is slow, and if your kids are having problems, don't blame me, because they're getting prescription drugs out of your medicine chest. The easy access of those kind of drugs, not being monitored in homes, and whatever issues kids are dealing with seems to be growing. Why do you think that is?
Because I think we've become a culture of suppressing pain. I think we look to do that in our lives. And, you know, pain is a phenomenal tool when properly used. Pain isn't meant to cause us suffering or make us sad. Pain exists to wake us up, to make us more alert, more aware, more present. So when your life is sailing along and everything is fine, you're less inclined to be introspective, to look for that core within yourself that guides you, where you get your principles, where you get your knowing, where you get your goals from internally. But when things begin to fall apart, when you are in pain, it brings you into the moment. It makes you more present. That's when we ask our greatest questions. Now, as a nation, we've been so misdirected and ill-focused at acquisition, at accomplishment, at technology, that we have sublimated to all of that the immediacy of the moment and what we can learn from suffering. So in order, I'm not saying get up in the morning and seek to suffer, but it is a natural process. It's part of life. It's like adolescence and being, in old age. Suffering is an aspect of life. It's going to happen. How we utilize it. Now, what we've done is sedate it. We look to narcotize it, to make it go away, to numb ourselves so we can keep up with the pace. And I think that's what Heath Ledger's behavior, because he was both trying apparently to be a good father to a recently born child, although out of wedlock, so that's a whole other cultural issue and pressures that may have been upon him. But here's someone who was trying to keep up. I mean, an Academy Award nominee and winner, I believe, and an icon for youth, and at age 28, now a father with obviously tremendous resources but tremendous pressure. Where does he turn? How does he seek help? How does he have the time to turn inward and see who he is? I mean, I don't know about you, but at 28, I had a whole lot of growing still to do, had done my share, but still had a ways to go. And yet we are all caught up in this race to keep up with the technology, and the social growth doesn't keep up with the technology, because the technology is not a natural rate of speed. Technology advances and operates at warp speed. And we do not. We evolve at a more natural pace in harmony with natural rhythms. And so I think what you can do with Heath Ledger's death is say, let it be a wake-up call. Let it bring us more present. You know, Viktor Frankl, Holocaust survivor and prolific writer, said that when he was in the concentration camps, one of the things he learned was to find beauty in a floating fish head, meaning that the Nazis gave them water with fish heads in it as a meal. And because he was so much in pain and his experience was so much one of suffering, it brought him so into the moment that he used the pain to find incredible beauty in what was present in his life. He was no longer seeking tomorrow or what could he acquire. He was forced to live incredibly in the moment. And none of us live in the moment anymore. At least some of us are waking up, hopefully, and beginning to realize that the patterns we've been living haven't been working for us. Systems are breaking down around us that used to make perfect sense, and all of a sudden we wake up and find something that we always relied on isn't making sense or isn't even available anymore. These are opportunities to wake up and say, okay, now let me see what I can create going forward.
Heath Ledger, with all of the pressures he faced because of his youth and family and success and everything else, still had also more resources at his disposal because of his fame and his wealth as a popular Hollywood actor. What about the young people today who do not have even the maturity of a 28-year-old? They're 10 years, 15 years younger. They're feeling this pain that is meant to help us assess where we are and what the problems are. But they don't have the maturity to deal with that, and they don't have the resources.
That's right.
What happens to them?
That's our job. You see, what happens to them very much depends on what we do. Because while you and I as grown-ups are responsible for our actions, young ones are not so responsible yet. There is an age before which, and whether you want to get into a legal discussion of what that age is or a moral, ethical, or spiritual discussion, there's a point at which they need guidance. They need our presence. They don't need to be babysat with iPods and MP3s and computers and television sets. They need the presence of living human beings who model for them how to handle power, how to handle abundance, how to function at an accelerated pace. And see, we've abdicated our responsibility to the children. And that abdication is a statement about the future we may be creating for ourselves and the world in general. Because when you abdicate responsibility to the young, you're basically selling off your future because they are the future.
So what is the responsibility? What is it the parents need to be doing right now to prevent a Heath Ledger incident from happening to their own children?
Well, they need to reprioritize within their own lives. They need to really sit down and decide what's important to them. And those kids need to be at the very top of that prioritizing schedule. They also need to be aware of their children and want to take the time. See, it takes time to be aware. And if you're both working and you're both trying to keep up with a huge mortgage and all of the other demands, or even try to keep up with the basic necessities of life, you don't have the time to be aware. You know, it's not in the moments when you sit down and plan to talk to your kid that you have the aha and see who they are moment. It's in the driving them somewhere because you're available and you said you drive them and their friend that you hear something in the car or you have an impromptu conversation with them. They're the moments that you really glean insight into where your child is. We have to first get present so we can be present with our children. And these are not easy answers, Dennis. Mm-hmm. This means serious adjustment of the quality of our lives.
And in the short term, lock up the prescription drugs in the house, I guess.
Well, I live in a suburban community that's fairly affluent, and I can tell you that I had a conversation just the other day with a 30-some-year-old mother who said to me that she doesn't have a friend who isn't on antidepressants. Now, she's talking about her 30-something peers who all have grade school children. She doesn't have a friend who isn't on antidepressants. So not only do we have to lock them up, we have to stop taking them because we're an over-medicated, over-sedated society because it's easier. Forget the fact that the pharmaceutical companies have pushed them on us and made them available and it's a part of our lifestyle. It's personally easier to take a pill than to figure out what the root cause is of why you have a rapid heartbeat, why you have anxiety, why you're depressed. It's much easier to take the pill. And so it isn't just lock them up. It's look to alternative remedies that are out there now in abundance. in how to know yourself better as opposed to put yourself to sleep, because that's what Heath Ledger did. Biochemically, biologically, physiologically, and spiritually, he went to sleep and didn't wake up. He didn't try to commit suicide. He took a combination of pills that put him into a sleep from which he never awakened. He is symptomatic. He is saying to us, you're all in a sleep from which you may not wake up. If you don't stop living in this manner and sedating and narcotizing and trying to run from what life is supposed to be about. And I write about this every single day on my blog. The very thing we're talking about, which is how do you take the worst news of the day, whatever that story is, and turn it into a positive lesson to help you go forward in your day. Because every story has a lower vibration message and a higher vibration message. And unfortunately, what we get inundated with every day is the tragedy and the crisis and the horror and the fear that the story generates, instead of, like Heath Ledger, my heart bleeds for his family. But while I say that, and it's a tragic loss, let's shine a bright light on what his message can be so that we can bring meaning to his life the way Viktor Frankl brought meaning to a floating fish head.
Popular culture contributes to this problem. Books, movies, television. New study by the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine showing that one-third of the most popular songs of the U.S. Contain references to drug and alcohol use. Which came first, the chicken or the egg here?
Well, you know, not only the study you just mentioned or the report you just mentioned, but even today out of Omaha, there's a study. It's on CNN, and I think KETV did it in Omaha this morning, which is by Iowa State University, Kansas State University, and the National Institute of Health all came to the same conclusion, and that is that violent video games make children who watch them more predisposed to violence and normalize violence so that when they encounter an aggressive event in their life, they're more inclined to behave violently because it became a norm for them, both physiologically, by the way, as well as psychologically. So, yes, the music has violence in it, and the music has drugs in it, and the video games have violence in them. But, you know, I think they're reflections of the slippery slope we allowed our culture to go down. And because we haven't stood up and said no, because you vote with your pocketbook. You only vote once every 4 years for the big picture, but you vote every day with your wallet. And so when we allow our children, listen, my daughter has an MP3. She's 14 years old, but I know what's on it. Okay. And I've had songs deleted from there because I listened to the lyrics, and I didn't want those lyrics playing over and over in her head.
All right, now let me stop you there because I want to ask you, this is what every parent's asking, how do you deal with the conflict that results from you doing that? Obviously, your child's not going to like that.
That's right. And there is that, you know, there's always going to be that parent-child conflict. But the way I deal with it is, one, I don't want to be her friend. I want to be her mother. And she can have friends she can, you know, spend her time with and have similar ideas with. If we have conflict of ideas, that's okay. When she's a grown woman, we'll deal with them as peers. But right now, it's my job. And so how I deal with it is I hope that I have built enough of a foundation and I spend enough quality time and she knows I love her enough that if I'm editing out a song, she figures somewhere I've got a good reason to do it. And even if she sneaks and listens to it somewhere else, I know I've laid the seed and the groundwork for a woman later who will make choices based on the values she learned mirrored from me, because she doesn't see me delete the song and then go listen to garbage. She sees me delete the song and listen to lyrics that inspire.
My guest is Carol Gold. She's a life coach and commentator with a sociology degree and a former family law attorney as well. Carol, thanks so much for your insights today.
Thank you so much, Dennis, for your time.